Welcome to the Grown and Grizzly Experience, a project meant to bring grown, grizzly humans together. If you live on the fringe and believe in hard work, this is the experience for you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Grown and Grizzly Experience. I have been in quite a hiatus lately. Been pretty rough on everybody. I took some time off to reflect, to grow as a person, try to get together a really good set list for the season two of the Grown and Grizzly Experience. This year, we're going to change directions a little bit. It's still going to have a lot of the same focus. We're going to talk about health and fitness and mental health and all those things, but I want to turn into more of a conversational piece. Tell people stories, get their stories out there, and just get some really good information, introduce you to some people that you may not otherwise ever find on social media, things like that. So without further ado, we're opening up this season with a guy that has very quickly become a close friend of mine. We have a very unique story. We were introduced via text message, Instagram, 2 years ago now at this point. A year ago. We were supposed to meet for Summer Strong 13, which never happened due to COVID and all of those things. I have family that has a house in the area that I was going to rent. Regardless, some people from Sorenex reached out and said, "Hey, do you have room? Let's get some people a place to stay." And I said, "Sure thing, let's go." So I was connected with this next guy. Obviously, we didn't end up meeting that year, but we just kind of stayed in contact, became really close friends on social media. This past year, just a couple weeks ago, we went to Summer Strong 14, met for the very first time in person. And I mean, all I can say is it was like we've known each other for years. So I'm going to introduce you guys to Coach Taylor Quick.
What's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? How are you doing?
Man, I'm good. It is a steamy, hot day here in Mississippi.
It's fairly cool here in New York City area. I walked outside, took my dogs out earlier, and sunshine. It's a nice, bright bluebird day, but it's cool to be in June. I think it's like 75 degrees, no humidity.
Man, that is fantastic. It is. It's probably pushing 90 to 95 here with about 437% humidity. So it's it's a lot of fun. You kind of swim through the air down here right now, and it's good. It's really good.
Yeah. Catch a flight on a mosquito every once in a while.
Yeah, man. You got to kind of duck those things. The air raid sirens go off every now and then, and they kind of come in swarms. It can be pretty bad, but this is home for me. I've lived here my whole life, so 32 years now. So I guess I'm used to it.
Yeah. So just to catch everybody up a little bit, how the show originally started was talking, really diving into how physical health and preparation deal with other things in life outside of the physical realm, specifically dealing with like mental stress and the struggles that come along with just life in general. The way I typically do it, and we'll start it this way and then we'll see where it goes. I just want to get a little bit of background from you, how you got introduced into health and fitness, how early you started playing sports. And then we'll start getting into some of the things you've dealt with. I know you've dealt with some things recently, that probably being a health and fitness enthusiast has at least helped get through that process.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So, like I said, I'm 32 years old. I was born and raised right here in Mississippi, been in the central part really my entire life with the exception of college. I started playing sports pretty early. I was in T-ball at 3 or 4, whatever age. And man, I played competitive sports from the time I was 3 or 4 years old until I was about 23. So for about 20 straight years, this competitive athletics was a big portion of my life. As far as the health and fitness side of it goes, it's kind of twofold. So my uncle, his name is Jet. My uncle Jet is a nuclear pharmacist, and part of his life was he was huge into health and fitness, man. He was in the gym all the time. Dude's just absolutely shredded. He's a big, bulky guy. He's really, he gets bald He's bald just like we are. He's got a freaking gray goatee down there about here. He rides a Harley. Awesome dude.
It is a nuclear, you said chemist?
Nuclear pharmacist.
Pharmacist.
Yeah. Okay. So he's a dog enthusiast, man. He's never been married. He's never had kids. So my brother and I are his kids.
Yeah.
And but his babies at home are wiener dogs. he loves his dachshunds, man. And he's been one of the biggest influences in my life. And so seeing him make a massive physical transformation when I was younger, he went from just a normal body type guy to just falling in love with the iron game and training and being in the gym and just loaded up on muscle, just a really yoked up guy. And then, went into high school and I was not the biggest guy in the world when I first started high school. I was probably like 5'10", 185, 190. Probably a normal looking person.
So not the gargoyle you are now.
I guess not. And so I got asked to come out for football. I played middle school football, but then I didn't play football my freshman year of high school. And I was a little more interested in chasing after girls than I was worrying about football. So one of the coaches stopped me in the hallway. He was like, "Hey man, you need to come play football." So I said, "Okay." So go out to football, backup quarterback. Like when I say backup, I'm like fourth or fifth string behind the water boy. Like I was bad. But they had me at a tight end is the other thing. And so then summer kicked off. We get in the weight room. It's the first time I've ever really been in a weight room myself. And I went from like 5'10", 185 to like 6'2 and a half, 240. Bam. And they're like, "Hey, guess what? You're playing offensive line." And that was home forever.
Yep.
Ended up playing college football. I played musical schools. It was really fun. I played junior college football at Hines Community College right here in right outside of Jackson, Mississippi. Had a great career there. Went on and played 1 year up at Ole Miss. I redshirted the year that I was there. ended up transferring for some different reasons and finished at an NAIA school right outside of Jackson called Belhaven University. They've actually transitioned to NCAA now. They're Division III. But when I was there, there was an NAIA school. So had some opportunities, worked out did a pro day, had a couple opportunities, interviews with different NFL teams, but none of that actually panned out. And so I transitioned at that point into the NARP life. Got out of athletics and was kind of working in the private sector and just absolutely missed the team atmosphere, missed athletics so much. And so I actually went and got the certifications necessary to become a high school coach. And that is where my coaching journey really got kicked off. So, but to answer your question about health and fitness, strength and conditioning, man, when I went to junior college and it was, the weight room was just like high school, right?
Yeah.
You go in there and you bench press, you deadlift, you back squat, and do some curls, and you maybe do some military press and some sit-ups, and you call it a day. So when I went to Ole Miss, I walk in the door and have this decked-out powerlift weight room, and I walk in on my visit, and my visit was during Christmas break right after they had just won the Cotton Bowl. So, like, everybody was gone. Mm-hmm. And so I really got a lot of individual attention from the coaches, and I actually got to sit down and discuss strength and conditioning for the first time. And the head strength coach at the time was a guy named Don Decker.
Okay.
And Coach Deck is a bit of a legend in the strength and conditioning field. He's out of state now, but he was attached to Houston Nutt, who was the head football coach at the time. He'd been at Arkansas. Man, and Deck really opened my eyes to – what actual strength conditioning is. And so then I get there, I'm walking on my first day and I'm looking around and these dudes are freaking, cleaning 300 plus, and guys over there squatting 600. This dude's over there benching 450. And I mean, you got guys over there with 180 pound dumbbells just plogging them out. And I'm like, yes, that's awesome. And then I get to my rack and I've got my coach over there and he's like, "All right, grab that bar." And then I was so disappointed. I was like, "Why? I want to lift, man. I'm strong. I can bench, I can squat." And he's like, "Nope." And for like 6 weeks, the heaviest thing I lifted was 95 pounds. And I was like, oh my God.
So even though you weren't a freshman anymore, they kind of put you through freshman academy.
They did. So I transferred in. So they did that with all the transfers. So it wasn't just me. We had several mid-year transfer guys, but they put us for like really almost 6 weeks. I mean, it was like they took any deficiency that you had, any movement pattern issues, and they basically just broke you down and rebuilt you. So I walked in there kind of heavy. Mm-hmm. When I left junior college, I was 6'5", 340 pounds.
Lord.
So I from the end of the season until I came up there, dude, I just ate like an idiot and didn't do much training. Because, again, junior college training, not exactly what I had in, there in Oxford. I went from 340 to like 285 during that 6 week time period. I dropped dang near 60 pounds and they started putting weight back on me when I was able to actually start training and they were putting numbers on me and everything. Got up to about 305 and that was probably the best shape I'd ever been in. I was like 16% body fat at 305 pounds.
Okay.
So absolutely fell in love with it, changed my major. Decided I wanted to be a strength coach. And then when I ended up transferring down to Belhaven, you know, my big question was, do you guys have strength and conditioning? This is what I want to do. And they said, well, yeah, we've got this guy. It's a small department. There's really only like two professors in it. This is a really small NAIA school. So, you know, our whole strength and conditioning department, freshman through senior, was like 40 kids.
Yeah.
Right. And so I get there and I go and meet this guy, and his guy's name is Dr. Don Berryhill. And the first thing I noticed about him was his right arm was like dead. Like it was all shriveled up and he couldn't do much with it. So I was curious. So I sat down and talked with him and we're just kind of chit-chatting back and forth. And he just kind of addressed the elephant in the room and he starts telling me his story. This guy was from Arkansas, got drafted by the Yankees in the first round coming out of high school, which back then there wasn't a whole lot of rounds, but I mean, and that's really where you went to find your pro players was high school. I mean, that's kind of where it was. Big time, big deal though. I mean, to get drafted by the New York Yankees at that time period was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's still huge today. But he got drafted by the Yankees and he was working in a factory and his arm got sucked into a machine. So he couldn't fulfill his contract anymore. The University of Arkansas was a four-year starter for football and baseball and All-American in both sports.
Oh, wow.
So he played outfield, would catch the ball in his left hand, take his glove off, throw it in, played DB for the Razorbacks. Had a great college career. He fell in love with training as well and pursued his master's and his doctorate after that. Got recruited by NASA. And ended up actually being one of the guys that designed the training protocols for the Apollo program.
Okay.
So all the astronauts that went to the moon, like he designed the training protocols for them. He wrote textbooks and all this stuff. And that was all fine and good. But the one thing that really told me what this guy was sitting in class one day and he had this no cell phone policy, but he wore his cell phone on his hip. And he had it on loud. He's an older man. So I figured, you know, maybe his wife wants to be able to get in touch with him, whatever. But he said that, no, I do consultations for surgeries sometimes. Like doctors will call me. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. So his phone rings in class one day. And he says, excuse me, guys, I'm going to take this. He picks his phone up, says, hello. Oh, hey, Dr. Andrews. Yes, I'd be able to do that. And he puts his phone in and says, hey, guys, this is Dr. James Andrews. I'm about to consult with a Tommy John surgery. And I can't remember who it was. It was some big-name pitcher in the major leagues. And it had just thrown his UCL out like a week before that.
Wow.
And at that point, I'm sitting there like my mouth on the floor because I understand what's happening. And none of the rest of the class has a clue. And I was like, my goodness, I have slipped and fell booty butt backwards into a gold mine. Right here in Jackson, Mississippi, at a minuscule liberal arts college. And so coming from Ole Miss, I get to that and learning under him, it was just this absolute onslaught of information. And he instilled a massive love of the human body and how it works, why it works. Mm-hmm. And how to look and how to see it and how to think about things. And I would not be where I am today without Don Decker or Don Berryhill. So those two guys were big influences in my life, along with other coaches. Yeah. The coaches that were over me specifically at Ole Miss, Jason Wilfong, he's at Oxford High School here in Mississippi, was a massive influence on me. Brian Weissman, who is in the Olympic side at Ole Miss still, was a massive influence on me. Those two guys taught me how to be a coach because they showed it every day. Mm-hmm. But it was just, man, those four guys are people I think of off the top of my head that really jump-started my journey into becoming a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, I think if you ask most strength coaches and they're honest, there's always going to be that handful of two to four people that you know are directly responsible for your success. Outside of obviously your own hard work and doing everything that you need to do the right way to get there. But I mean, I have the same thing. I've got a handful of people that I know for a fact if they weren't interjected into my life in almost just like a just control chaos kind of moment, I wouldn't be sitting here at NYU right now. So we all have those things, and I think it's very important to kind of shout those people out, give them the credit that's due to them also. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, man.
So I talked a little bit in the beginning about how, you know, Taylor and I have come really close. And he will, before I can get there, probably almost use the word family. And so it's hard for me to really put into words. Taylor is a lot better speaker than I am. But it really is. And he brought together this also group. This is something I just kind of want to add to the agenda for today, but he brought together this group, and in this group, nobody really knows each other than Taylor. he's the glue that kind of holds this thing together. It started off as just, he knew this group of guys or these individual guys across the country doing different things from all different walks of life. Kind of had an understanding that we all had a lot of similarities and like hobbies and things that we like to do, and put together this fundraiser, which we ended up doing. Started a group chat on Instagram, and this group chat, this fundraiser, this thing that started off as fun has turned into probably one of the greatest daily parts of my life. We joke about it, but it's in all reality, we could almost charge admission into this group. we could raffle off tickets to come in this group just from a pure entertainment value, but not only entertainment value, I would say from a therapeutic value as well. This group has really become family, and the title of this episode will be Blood Doesn't Make You Family. And so getting to more current, where we now actually know each other in person, we met at Summer Strong this year, finally got a house. So my family owns a house in Columbia, South Carolina, where Sword Nexus is. And 10 guys who have, other than a couple of you, and some of you road tripped out together, but 10 guys who by and large had never met before in person, decided it would be a good idea to just rent a house together. And it could not have been scripted any better. It couldn't have been, no better scenario could have came out of what happened than what happened, I believe. And I'm going to let Taylor dive into that whole thing.
Yeah, man. So my wife has a running joke with me that we can't go anywhere without seeing someone I know. It is a joke, but it's actually not at the same time, because it really does truly happen. And part of that is just because of my nature. I'm a very relationship oriented person, and it's hard for me to meet a stranger, and it's very hard for me to meet someone that I don't find common ground with.
Yeah.
And where where I have people that I have complete opposite viewpoints on, and we're at completely dissenting points, I do my best to stand on that common ground, because I feel like if you can do that, if you can stand on that common ground, you may find that your differences aren't quite so extreme. and that's just how I live my life. And so that being said, to segue into this, so you and I were introduced by, I think Josh Dobby.
Yep.
That introduced us, man. I was hunting a place to stay for Summer Strong 13. And obviously that didn't end up happening, but Josh connected us. And so from that point forward, you know, you and I had started developing a friendship, a relationship, and had, you were going to come down and hunt here at the house, and we were going to have a great time. That also ended up not happening for, I don't even remember why we ended up not being able to get that together, but regardless. So the group that he's talking about right there, that started as a fundraiser for a nonprofit organization called Blood Origins. Blood Origins, you know, they seek to convey the truth about hunting and through science, data, statistics, and things like that to try to preserve the tradition of hunting the right way, you know, not poaching. And not overkilling or anything of that nature, but real hunting.
Which Robbie is very vocal about.
Like, yes.
Totally. So, things like that.
Yeah, I don't know if this video is going to get published or not, but so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to wear this shirt. I definitely wanted to plug Robbie and Blood Origins. That's what this logo is our Helix logo, that it's the hunting is in our DNA. So they started a fundraiser for a nonprofit out of Wyoming called Hunters for the Hungry that provides game meat to the less fortunate people that are hungry, orphanages, food banks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they ran it as a competition, and you could get teams together. And so I reached out to people that I knew shared similar interests. Only a few of these people had I actually met in person before. So we'll start with those. I'd met Logan Hanks, mm-hmm. Scott Davis, Bo Sandoval, and Brandon Langlois. So those are the four guys, and Jared Myatt. I'd met Jared, obviously. Those are the five people in that group that I'd met prior. You, George, even though George Adams is right down the road, I'd actually never met him in person. And then Ross, I had never met. So I knew everybody, all of these people had similar interests. We're all very obsessed with health, fitness, and physicality. We all love the outdoors. We all love to hunt. And I knew we could kind of come together and it would be all those mutual interests would take precedence over any dissimilarities that we may have. So I just sent out a massive group chat, threw everybody in the group chat, said, hey, this is what I like to do. Who's in? And everybody was like, yeah, let's do it. And so what started out as a fundraising effort, and we did actually raise over $8,000 for Blood Origins to give to Hunters for the Hungry. It started out as a fundraising effort and quickly became a family. So through that, that entire group, with the exception of two people, attended Summer Strong, and with the exception of Bo, who went and obviously stayed in a hotel with his wife, and then Jared, who was working for Sorenex, so Jared had to kind of be a part. The rest of us all stayed in that house, and so it was just this really
John and
Jake and
Elmer
and your Ross and. So we start throwing in all these other people. And then I don't know. And then I think his name was Dusty. Was that the guy's name? Dusty?
Dusty Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know anything about Dusty. Dusty just kind of shows up.
George brought Dusty in.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that was kind of indicative of everything. Right. So like none of us knew anything about Dusty, and George is just like, hey man, come on. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, he's just right there, lockstep in with everybody else, and it's just this big group. And it was just this really cool experience, man. We all get there, and everybody that was there goes off to the grocery store to get supplies for the weekend. And Brandon and I brought up two sacks of crawfish from down here in Mississippi. We had some live crawfish that we brought. We had about 65 pounds.
So those sacks are about 33 pounds each.
Yeah, so you're going to run anywhere between 30 and 35 pounds. So the two that we got were 33 and 32.
Okay.
So we brought in 65 pounds of live crawfish. We had potatoes, corn, mushrooms, cauliflower, onions, garlic,
Brussels sprouts,
sausage. And we had a big Cajun crawfish boil. And so Brandon is from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So he's as Cajun as they come.
Yeah.
And man, dude, he did a fantastic job, man. So it was probably one of the best crawfish boils I've ever been to. And it's surreal for me because there's people, you know, that have never had crawfish before. Yeah. It's like Ross, he's from Idaho. He's never had crawfish. Right. Yeah. Never had crawfish before. And then me.
And then me, South Carolina, we use crawfish as bait. Like, I'm like, wait, we're gonna eat catfish bait? What's the deal with that?
Well, they serve catfish bait here in gas stations too. You can get liver and gizzards and all that stuff fried, you know, so whatever. There's a reason we sweat Crisco. But besides that, like, it was this incredible experience of people who have never had these things before that just jumping in and trying it. And we're sharing culture with each other and the conversations that happens, and Zamia shows up. And Jared brings Ty, and Jared and Ty are both from Louisiana, so that's nothing new to them. So this was like them coming on, having a taste of home. And then, you know, the neighbors from across the street, we look up and there's like five people that they live across the road, and they just come to check out what's going on.
Yeah.
And, man, it was just this incredible, incredible, surreal experience of people that you've met only hours before, but somehow have connected with on a level that's so deep and so real that you would not believe that you'd only just met them.
Yeah.
And it's, you can't fake it. You can't script it. You can't create that intentionally. It was organic. It was raw. It was real. And it was incredible.
Yeah.
And to me, Summer Strong, if you've never been, you need to go. You need to go. You can't really describe it to people who haven't been there. It's hard to discuss it. So I'm not going to try to do that right now. I will say this: if you haven't been, you need to go.
Yeah, mark it on your calendars. It'll be the third weekend of May next year. Go.
Absolutely, go. There will be a crawfish boil again. So if you're listening to this, what is crawfish? Come to Summer Strong 15, you'll find out. But Summer Strong, as great as it was and as amazing as it was, to me, the house and the atmosphere there was just as amazing.
Absolutely. I think you and I maybe said it and somebody else, like, if nothing else had happened that weekend other than the 10 of us in this house and a crawfish boil, Summer Strong aside, like, I would have had a blast that weekend. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It was absolutely incredible. It couldn't have kicked off the weekend any better.
No. And literally everything was going right. You know, like, it was really awesome deal. We had, and Brad had brought, some ground elk meat and some elk backstrap that he had harvested. And so we had that. And I grilled that on like a $20 Weber grill with charcoal that had been sitting outside for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it was some of the best meat we've ever had. And I don't think that's not saying that I'm just this amazing cook, but I think it was the atmosphere, man. Like, it was just the amount of just love and joy and happiness that was just.
And sharing. And
that, yes, it was just sharing it. I mean, and we tried that the new seasoning and marinade from Casey Bard over at Tactic Calories had sent over. That had not been released yet. It was absolutely incredible. And then we had the flip-flop sauce that Andy had sent through, and man, dude, oh my goodness. And so it was a manifestation of something I'd heard back in February. So when I got to go to Winter Strong this year, which is really, really cool. Bert said at Winter Strong, just resonated with me so heavily. It was you struggle, you eat, you talk. And that's how community grows. You mm-hmm. struggle together, you eat together, and you talk together. And so that's what he said we were going to do at Winter Strong. And that is exactly what we did.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we did that night. We'd all been through different struggles, whether it be the COVID pandemic that had been a year, you know, people losing family members and friends to illness or self-inflicted injuries and people losing parts of themselves, finding new pieces of themselves, going through health issues that have been long lasting. And then everything we've overcome, we struggled, we came together and we shared a meal that was made authentically. It wasn't gone and bought somewhere. It was something that required toil. It was something that required effort. And we shared that together. And then we talked and we deepened relationships and we began new relationships. And we went from friends to family.
Yeah.
And it was an absolutely incredible experience.
In the matter of hours.
Absolutely.
And you're talking about like the toil, the struggle and everything with the cooking. When I got, I was the last person of the group to get there. When I got there, Brandon, I'm fairly certain, I could be making this up, I'm fairly certain, shirt was off, he was dripping in sweat, like still he was cooking the second sack of crawfish at this point. I pull up in the yard, and I come down the street honking my horn, like, I'm here, guys, I'm here, party can start now. And like you said, there's Zamia's already there, Jared and Ty's there, and I get there and I see these people that I know for a fact aren't part of the group, and I'm like, who the heck are these people? There's like, I don't know, 20 people at this house, and then like you said, it's the neighbors from across the yard, and I'm like, man, what have I gotten myself into? But yeah, it was just a phenomenal experience. Like you said, you know, the last year, year and a half, really, while we might not have been physically together, went through this whole thing together. And it took a toll on everybody. And I think that weekend was a healing process for everybody on some capacity.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the culmination of healing, right? So it was kind of that exclamation point, that end cap of we've come through this, we've persevered, we've struggled, we've grown, and now we're ready to launch into the next phase.
Yeah.
You know, it was just this really awesome culmination point. And it was just incredible. Without saying much else, I can't oversell it, but I certainly don't want to accidentally undersell it. So I'm just going to leave it at that, man. It was incredible.
Yeah, you almost kind of just get yourself into a loop of the same words: amazing, incredible, amazing, incredible. And while it's true, you say it enough, people are like, okay, whatever. He's gassing it up way too much. But yeah, that's. Also a great segue into actual some of the things. And we talked about this in the group chat too, like our top three to top five moments for that happened at Summer Strong. Some of us had some of the same ones, some of us had different ones, which is another great part about this event. I'm not going to call it a conference because it's not a conference.
It's a birthday party.
It's a birthday party. It's yeah. in reality, in factuality, it actually is a birthday party. Summer Strong, for those of you who don't know, started as a birthday party for Pops, Richard Soren, who's the godfather, the founder, CEO, everything. Sorenx wouldn't be here without him. Had a birthday party now 14 years ago. Bert, I said, hey, what do you want to do? And he was like, let's just get some people over to the house and cook food and lift some weights. And I think what Bert said, there was like, 15 people showed up the first one?
Yeah, something like 11 to 15, some small number.
Just some a couple people they knew from the Iron Game, the coach or another equipment seller from around the Southeast region. And then in the time span of 14 years, it's gone from 11 to 15 people to 750 to 1,000 people. Are floating in and out of this thing over the course of a weekend. And it's just insane. I know some of my top moments, and I won't go like try to reiterate everything that was said, but listening to Luke Day talk and his whole thing about just above all else, like, and I think is a great, as a strength coach myself and a college strength coach, is a great direction that the field needs to go. Like the X's and O's, the science, squat, lift, bench, clean, all those things. Brett Bartholomew said it before, like, any monkey can write a program. How do you coach it? And his whole thing, like, you know, do all those things, but above all else, love. That's like, that was just a huge impactful moment for me. And I think it embodies a lot of what we've already spoke about with our group. And it just outside of the world of strength conditioning and football and all those things, like, really and truly, the world could learn something from that statement. Above all else, love. And that just spoke, like, that was probably my number one moment from the weekend. If I had to really sit and think about it and put a 1, 2, or 3 on things, as far as impactful moments, that would probably be mine from this year.
Yeah, man. So that was, man, Luke was incredible. Hard to say anything else other than that. It was a very moving message, because, you know, and he talked about this in his message, where he came from, who he was, just opposed to where he is now, who he is now.
Yeah.
You know, that's, man, and I really hope that Sornex will upload on their YouTube channel or something these presentations, because they were just unbelievable. That was a very high moment. It's hard for me to assign a number one, because my truth for me personally moment was at the deadlift party. Just actually getting on the platform and deadlifting again was a big moment for me. But it almost feels selfish to assign that as my one moment, because that was all about me. And that weekend was so much more than just about me.
Yeah.
Right.
And one of the speakers talked on this, we get into this pattern of the thoughts about, like, you know, like you're saying, like, it feels selfish to talk about this, but, like, I think that's what Sornex and what Summer Strong is really about, is, like, you can have this moment and it's your moment, but that moment was also yours because of the weekend. Like, something that weekend made you say, I'm going to get on the deadlift platform. My doctor may not recommend it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to put some weight on the bar and I'm going to pull it, and it's going to feel good.
And it did, man. It absolutely did. So I guess this is as good a time as any to discuss this. So the reason that was such a big deal, man, is I'm Sornex Summer Strong 14 was not only an exclamation point to the end of COVID, to the end of being separated. For me, it was an exclamation point to the end of a 2-year journey with a massive health issue. So I had an infection in my foot that I've had for almost 2 years. I've been septic twice, hospitalized twice for it. I was on daily antibiotics from September 29th of 2019 until March 30th of 2021. From July 15th till February 3rd, July 15th, 2020 till February 3rd of 2021, I was on IV antibiotics every single day. So, man, I was actually on antibiotics, through an IV up to 3 times a day. I had a PICC line in my arm. You can still see the dot right there. So I had a PICC line run all the way up into my heart. It was nuts, man. Every day like that. And then it got taken out on February 3rd. I went to Winning Strong on the 5th. And within a few days of being back from Winning Strong, I was still on oral antibiotics, but my infection had come back. And then by March the 9th or so, it had gotten to the point where I was septic again, man. Like, the lymph nodes in my groin area were the size of ping pong balls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad. So I ended up in the hospital. And then on March 15th, they actually amputated my big toe on my right foot.
Only half
most of it. Well, two-thirds. Two-thirds. So recovery from that began. And fortunately, that got all the infection, man. So they were – and just so everybody kind of understands what we were dealing with here, the infection had eaten through – the ligaments on the inside of my great toe to my big toe there, to the point that, like, it had turned and shifted because the other ligament was pulling it. Oh. So, like, my toe was continuously out of socket. Most of the bone was rotted and eaten away. If I squeezed on my toe enough, pieces of the bone would pop out of the hole on the side of it. It was great. the good news is that I had a little bit of peripheral neuropathy, so I didn't feel any of that, which sucks, but it doesn't suck at that time.
Silver lining.
Yes, very much so. Anyway, got that surgery done and began the recovery process, healed very, very well. My surgeon, my doctor, everybody had told me that they still can't understand or really get to the point of figuring out how or why my body kept that infection just in the end of my toe for almost 2 years. But between just me fighting it and antibiotics and everything else, it kept it there. The bad part of that was because of the intensity of the antibiotics and what I was on and the location of the wound, man, I was sidelined from training. And because I was bombed and I ate like crap and really ate my feelings for a little while, I got up to almost 380 pounds. And so before the toe issue resolved, I got in my head, I was like, I'm going to stop eating like crap and get better health. And man, I dropped 55, 60 pounds just through food and eating better. The day I had surgery, I was 309.
That was a pretty
great process. I picked up some pounds on during recovery because I couldn't move much. Mm-hmm. I gained some weight. But at Summer Strong was the first time I've had a barbell in my hands to lift other than an empty bar doing demonstration type stuff for my athletes. For me to lift a heavy weight, it was the first time. So getting on that platform at HQ for Sore Necks, surrounded by people that want nothing but the best for you, people who know the journey I've been on, people who have been with me every step of the way, people who have stayed in my corner. I mean, like Jared from Sore Necks actually came and sat with me in the hospital right after I had surgery, man. He showed up the day after and sat with me for about an hour or so. He drove an hour out of his way between Louisiana and Georgia or Alabama, where he was going to do work for Sore Necks. He made a point to come and sit with me and hang out and just visit. And that just speaks to the family that Sore Necks is.
Yeah.
But being on that platform, lifting, it was the exclamation point to the, you survived this. You didn't just survive it. You kicked it in the teeth. Mm-hmm. And now it's time to take it up a notch and go to the next level.
Yeah.
Ended up meeting my new coach while I was at Summer Strong. So I got to meet Greg Walsh.
Yep.
Greg is the creative genius behind Wolf Brigade Gym. So if you haven't checked them out, man, and they're not very far for you, man. They're just in Rochester up there in New York. So I would definitely recommend going and checking them out. Working with Greg now and the things that he's doing, the way that he sees things, and the way that he's coaching me is incredible. Mm-hmm. The amount of movement that I've recovered in very minimal sessions with Greg has been absolutely amazing. So I'm looking forward to continuing that, man, and just getting back into the thing that I love so much, which is training and physical culture and strength and my life.
Yeah. So talking about that a little bit more, obviously, you know, you had your struggles, which you kind of touched on a little bit. How did the previous, you know, 20 years or plus of background of health and fitness and sports help you kind of get through the last 2 years from a mental standpoint?
Well, from a mental standpoint, it was very important because I could always go back to, we're running 100-yard sprints on turf in July in Mississippi. It's 102 degrees outside. The turf surface is like 130.
Yeah.
We've got 10 sprints. Let's go. We're running stadiums in an SEC stadium. I go back there, you know, just the different things that required you to shut off that notion of quitting. There is no quit. There is no stop. There is no, well, if I don't finish, it'll be okay. No, it won't. Because when you get into life, when you leave athletics behind, those lessons transfer over. Because when you get to life, there is no give up. Mm-hmm. Because if you give up and quit, there is no, oh, I can, if I give up and quit today on life, there is no tomorrow. And it affects more than just you. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, I'm taking playing time away from myself. Oh, I'm harming my future possibilities of being a professional athlete, whatever. You have a wife, man. You have kids. You have people who depend on you to be constant, to be stable, to be someone they look to see what perseverance is, to be someone they look to see what grit and determination look like. And 20 years of athletics and training and fitness and health and strength, even though I couldn't go back and physically grab those things at that time, and even though I couldn't use that as a way to process and deal with the world and to vent my frustrations physically, I had that background there to see me through those moments and say that there is an end in sight. This is not forever. These sprints will end. This illness will end. Where will you be at the end of it? What are you doing now to make sure that you're where you want to be when this is over?
Yeah. So the physical aspect of it is not necessarily what you leaned on, but the lessons lessons last a lifetime.
Absolutely. The physical aspect was huge, right? So years of training and learning how to move and how to think about movement. See, that was one of the coolest parts of this whole illness, man, because I had to learn to walk a different way.
Yeah.
So that I didn't put pressure out on that toe. Well, here's what that led to. So here's what was really cool. So generally when you have your big toe amputated, you're looking at weeks of physical therapy, months, usually up 2 to 3 months of not being any type of load bearing.
Yeah.
You know, and basically learning how to walk again.
Yeah, because I mean, for those that don't know, or I guess I've never really thought about it, the big toe is one, it's the big toe because it's the biggest toe you have, but it's the big toe because that's where movement comes from. You can't really do much without the big toe. And that's why he's saying, you know, most of the time people have those amputations, they have to like relearn how to walk.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, people compare having your big toe cut off to essentially having your foot cut off, because you have to basically learn how to do it all over again. And what was really neat for me, Brad, was that because I had learned so much about movement and learned how to move and how to think about movement, I taught myself how to walk before that amputation to keep the pressure off of the end of my foot. And I had that amputation on March 15th. Well, on May 28th, I'm deadlifting 475 pounds on a platform at Sornex and walking around, and nobody has any idea that I have a missing toe unless they know me.
Yeah.
There was no downtime. I didn't have to go to a day of physical therapy. I did not have to go to any type. I don't have to use any type of prosthetics. I don't have any type of filler in my shoe, because I taught myself movement in the interim to accommodate it. And then that became the norm. And now that is how I actually move. And without knowing me and without knowing my story, watching my gait pattern, you have no clue.
Yeah. And I was saying, it sounds so weird to say, but when I first met you, I'm like looking and I'm like, well, you really can't tell that he's missing a large portion of his toe. And like, unless you know, or he shows you, which he will show you if you ask.
No,
here it is. You couldn't tell. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that comes from like our background, is having an understanding of human movement, how to manipulate human movement and make it work through any type of deficiency. So it's pretty cool that you were, I mean, obviously it sucks that you're now missing a large portion of your toe, but it's pretty cool that you are able to personally use that information to get through a situation and better yourself.
Yeah, man, it was neat. And, you know, it's easy to sit here on this side of it and tell you, like, I mean, really and truly, it doesn't bother me. And I say this honestly, like, you say I'll show it to anybody. I really do not care, because it's what it represents for me. And, yeah. And I'm gonna be honest with you. When they first mentioned amputation in February of 2020, I about had a panic attack sitting there. I was so, so scared. I can't even begin to put that into words. It terrified me, because my only thought was, it's going to change everything. My life will never be the same. I'm not going to be able to chase my kids. I'm not going to be able to play with my kids and run and jump. And I'm not going to be able to hunt anymore. I'm not going to be able to do all these, not going to be able to start going through my head. And fortunately, we didn't amputate right then, because I don't know where I would have been mentally to do that. But through time, over a year later, right, the mental state changed so much. It got to the point where it was like, okay, this is making me sick. It's not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse. Cut it now. Cut it right now. Cut it off. Be done with it. Yeah. And then I had someone ask me, one of the nurses actually asked me, because I try to be a happy person that has a great attitude all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and I, because I really believe that if you do that, if you have that great attitude, that joy, that, that's going to affect other people around you. It's going to affect your life. And so I try to do that the best I can. One of the nurses actually asked me how I was doing so well with a toe amputation. And my immediate answer was, because I don't have a choice, because I know right now, I know people who have served in our military who are missing feet, legs, arms, all the way up to their hip. You know, you got guys that are double amputees, quadruple amputees, and they're out there right now kicking butt and taking names at whatever they do. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I complain, if I got upset one time about missing 2/3 of my big toe, that somewhere, somehow, one of those badass dudes was going to appear and slap the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's just kind of who they are, right? They just, what? Yeah. I just knew that was coming. And so, like, it forced me, man. Perspective was an amazing thing. And part of that was through some of the people that I met at Winter Strong and some of the people that I've met in the veteran community through strength and conditioning and through social media and being tied to these different people. So that was a big part of it. And man, it was incredible to see the shift happen over a year.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Powerful stuff. I hope that somebody gets something out of that. I mean, if just one person gets anything out of it, it'll be worth it. So the way I typically like tie these things up, I want, you know, give not just for strength and conditioning, but just, I guess, life in general, everything. Give your, I would say big three as far as advice. Tell us what you're doing. I don't think we got that in the introduction, what you're doing now, and what the future holds for T-Quick.
So right now, my biggest three things I'm doing right now is I'm a dad and a husband. First off, my wife's name is Casey. She is incredible. She's the glue that holds our family together when I'm off and not doing well, she comes in there and she's rock solid, man. I don't know where I'd be without her. Really and truly. I have three kids, Trip, who will be 5 in August. My daughter Bryn just turned 3 at the end of May. And then my youngest son, Tucker, will be a year old in August as well. So those are my big things, man. My family is everything to me. I love being a dad more than I love anything in the world. It is the best thing ever. And anybody that has ever told me about, hey, we're going to have a baby, this is their first one, that's usually what I tell them. It is the best thing ever, because it really is. But I'm also a strength and conditioning coach. I just changed over to a new job, man. I'm at the high school level here in Mississippi. I'm now at Union High School. Union is it's a 3A school. So that's kind of like a middle-sized school here in Mississippi. We have some absolutely incredible athletes, an incredible group of coaches, and it's a great, great community. My wife actually went to school there, so she's really, really excited about us being there. It's kind of like a homecoming for her.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about it. It was one of those really weird situations, because the job I was at before was an amazing job. I had no intentions or desires to leave. I could have stayed there for the next 20 years if it allowed. But this opportunity came along as something that was brought to me. I wasn't seeking it out. And after talking with my wife about it, we jumped on that, and so that's where we are. And that's for right now. That's what the future holds. I don't see, you know, anything coming that's going to entice me away from that. I really enjoy it. I think it's a great place, and this, I'm really happy with it. We're 3 weeks into our summer training right now, and it's been an amazing response. The kids they buy in really quickly, and they love what we do. So it's been really fun to be there.
That's awesome, man. And then just finish up. I know several speakers at Summer Strong spoke on it and have spoken on it in the past, but I guess give your personal, what you would say, I guess, pillars for success are.
Oh man. You know, that's something I'm still figuring out every day. My buddy Brandon Lilly has a saying. He talks about the plus one attitude, the plus mm-hmm. one mentality. And that's something that I've tried to adopt, especially through the whole getting through this infection and everything else, was that every decision, everything you do, every thought you have, every word you say, it's either a plus one or a minus one. There's no neutrality in life. It's only polarity. You're either better or you're worse for everything you do, everything you think, everything you say. And at the end of the day, when is your tally in the positive or is it in the negative? You know, are you improving or are you getting better? Is it possible to be 100% plus one every day? I don't know. I haven't found a day yet where I've been, everything I've done, every thought I've had, every word I've said was 100% a plus one. Haven't got there yet. I hope to get there, but I haven't.
Do the pluses outweigh the minuses?
Right. So at the end of the day, are you in the positive or are you in the negative? Because there's no neutrality. Right. And so that's something I look at, is it's just that perspective of that everything matters. Because if everything doesn't matter, then nothing matters. Because there's no, that's not really that important. No, it is. The way you do it, how you view it, the way that you approach everything, it all matters. Because if it doesn't, then nothing matters. And it's all just for naught. That's kind of the way that I'm trying to view things in my life. And man, I don't want anybody to sit here and listen to this podcast and go, hey man, that guy's got it all figured out. No, I do not. Come hang out with me for a day. You'd be like, dang, dude, he is. That dude's, no. I'm figuring it out as I go. But I think that's the beauty of it, man, is that nobody has ever looked at me once and said, hey, you have to be 100% perfect every day for the rest of your life. Nobody's ever said that. But I've had plenty of people say, hey, man, you need to do your damnedest to be 100% perfect every day. And I think there's a difference there of giving that effort to be a plus one and everything is absolutely massively important. Yeah. So I think, and as far as my pillars for success, I think perspective matters, and you have to have the right perspective on everything. Everything that we do, we have to do with great intent. That comes from the training world, man. I tell my kids this, my athletes this. There's one thing I will not coach. I will not do it. I refuse point blank. I will not coach your effort. I will not do that. If you're not going to come in here with high intent and great effort, awesome. Go home, come back tomorrow. Yeah. That's the way I am as a coach. I'm not going to coach your effort. I'm not going to waste my time with that, because you know what the standard is. Adhere to the standard. End of story. So right perspective, high intent. And the third thing, man, and this is something that's personal for me, is compassion.
Yeah.
Have compassion for people. Have compassion for this world. There is enough negative garbage in it. Do not add to that. Be that compassionate person that looks on a situation and comes to that situation with humility, with grace, and understand that just because it's not the way you think it should be, just because it's not perfect, just because it's not something something's not going exactly right, you've been on that side of things before. You've been that person to someone else that had to show you compassion, had to show you grace. Just have compassion and be a good person. Doesn't cost a dime extra to be a good person.
There you go. I think that's a statement. It's one that resonates a lot on several of shows I do. Just at the end of the day, just be a good person. And I think that's a pretty good place to end it. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day, coming on the show. This is going to be a good kickoff to a good season. I have a pretty good lineup coming up this year. So again, thank you for taking time, telling your story, and obviously I'll be in touch with you later.
Yeah, man. See you in the group chat.
Yeah, I think there's about 117 messages.
My phone's been sitting here lighting up while we've been talking. We're going to have the whole 9+ going on, and this guy's actually going to be like 143.
Yeah. So. All right, man. Well, I'll let you get to your day. I'll get this edited, and I probably plan on having it up start of the week. So probably Monday, it'll go live.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you having me on, buddy.
Yeah, my computer just died, but Anchor's still here.
Yeah, you froze on the screen. That's awesome. Good stuff. All right, brother. Yeah. See you, man.
We hope you had a great experience. Thank you for listening. Until next time, stay grown, stay grizzly, own your life.